I know. Let me see if I can. Let's see.
He gets all the credit.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, so Cynthia, do you want to say something, or should I just say stuff?
Sure.
Or?
Sure. Well, everybody, thank you so much for coming tonight. And as you can see, we have our lovely speaker here tonight, Fred Herman, also a cousin to Archie Bell, I'm sure, of some sort. And if you can look over to the right, to the chat section, you will see, oh, it's gone. Huh. Wow. Okay. I will put it there again. I put a little link up for if you wanted to give it Donna, then you could. Let me just say one thing about Donna. For this month, June and July, we are lovingly and thankfully giving 10% of all money that comes into AIMC is going to go right back out to people who are definitely feeling the heat and the burn, and that would be the Navajo Nation COVID Relief Fund. It may be that July we go with Roadrunner, but for this month and next month, we have committed to go with the Navajo Nation COVID Relief Fund because they are in desperate straits. So if you can, before the end of the night, I will definitely put this back up. I don't know what happened to it. It disappeared when I fell out of here, I guess. So, thank you so much. I'm going to give it to Fred. If you can, all put yourselves on mute for now until a little bit later, until we may have a section where Fred wants us to speak. Which case, Carol, did you have something?
Yeah, you can open your own chat window, and I see a link that's probably the one you posted because it says.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so it is there from. Okay, so I will hunt that down and make sure that everyone can see it. So I guess it's up to you now, Fred. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Again, thanks for coming. This is a lovely turnout tonight. So I have another announcement, I guess. I mean, first of all, I just think the way we're doing the Don is really cool, so that the 10% is going to this some organization dealing with food insecurity in the state. And that was a really good idea. This way, the Don is not in competition with each other. So this way, whatever you give, just 10% goes. So I think it's just the perfect way to do that. And again, there's no conflict about if you give where you're giving to. So I think that's great. The other thing I'll announce is that going forward on Sunday night, well, yeah, on Sunday nights, we're going to change it up a bit. And we'll meet from 6:30 to 7:30, not to 8. And there'll be no set topic. Whoever is leading that night will do what they want, whether it's reading something and having discussion, whether it's whatever that is. There'll be a sit, of course, and then there'll be something after that, but we wanted to change it up a bit, especially since we were doing these topics two times a week, and a lot of the time now it seems that a lot of the same people are coming both nights, so it's kind of superfluous. So that's what we're going to do going forward. So just a heads up to everybody. That's what we'll do. And it's a work in progress. If things get changed along the way, or obviously we'll let you know. You'll find out for sure. All you got to do is show up. You'll find out. So tonight, we've been doing these five recollections, remembrances, reflections, whatever you call them, whatever you want to call them. And they come from the early suttas. And they're really meant to be a practice. Like we did somewhat during our meditation. And that's why they're called reflections, recollections, remembrances. There's something to keep in mind. So this is an aside, but this is from Ken MacLeod, a teacher I really respect. And these are four different, you can call them intentions, aspirations, prayers. Whatever you choose, doesn't matter. So they are. These are invocations. Give me energy from my heart to turn to the spiritual. Give me energy for the spiritual to become a way. Give me energy for this way to dispel confusion. Give me energy for confusion to arise as wisdom. So in these invocations, in these invitations that we actually speak to ourselves, something to aspire to, the second one says, give me energy for the spiritual to become a way. So we can replace that. He put spiritual in it. Originally it was, give me energy for the Dharma to become a way. And also what this means to me is that give me the energy, the mindfulness to remember to use the Dharma as the lens from which I see all things with. That which I bring my practice with me from the Krishna into the world. So give me the energy for the spiritual, for the Dharma to become a way. So these reflections that we've been working with here for the last 5 weeks are one of those ways to see life through a spiritual lens. If we reflect on them in earnest, with intention. So I'm going to read them again. And these will be the ones that Thich Nhat Hanh uses. They're just more, a little more concise. They're not as lengthy or more in a modern language. So they are. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And finally, my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. So those are what we've been working with. So, and these are meant, again, to be not taken lightly. They're an invitation. We can use them as a reflection on the cushion or in our lives. As we're walking around, we could just say these things to ourselves. You pick one, work with it a day, a week, whatever you choose. But I guarantee that if you do that, something's going to shift in your life. You know, I know these phrases at first glance, you know, or at first blush, whatever. They can be, oh, you read them and you go, oh, you know, life's a bitch. You get old, you die. What's the point? So if you look at that kind of an attitude, and I understand that, I mean, I can see that as well. If you're just taking it at face value. That's, you know, that's kind of not really turning towards these reflections or these sentences. It's certainly not using them as a reflection. That's kind of, I always look at, that's like dealing with them like sideways. Oh yeah, it's okay, yeah, okay, bye. You know, and then you kind of go on your way. You're not really paying much attention to them. It's just, it's really something you don't want to deal with. It's really what that is. It's resignation. And resignation is actually a form of aversion. And it arises pretty much out of fear or really not know what to do with that. Not know what to do with what these phrases are getting at. So obviously the Buddha wouldn't, you know, wouldn't bring these up, and it wouldn't have lasted 2,600 years if they didn't have an impact on people's spiritual lens, the way they approach their life or see their life. Right. So what we need to do with these is really to try and be open to them and not be afraid of them. Because I think that's part of what arises when we really start looking at them. So the phrases themselves, or the practice, I want to say again that they're a practice in as much as mindfulness is a practice. There are all these practices in the Buddhist tradition. You know, I mean, in America, we just pick meditation, we just pick mindfulness, yeah, because we want to feel better. Obviously, these phrases, you're not going to necessarily get those in a secular, you might if it's Stephen Batchelor, but in a more secular dharma or a meditation class that's aimed at making me feel better. These phrases are not going to make you feel better. You know, not at first blush. What they're meant to do is to have us confront reality pretty bluntly and see what that is. What's that like? How does that rub against us? How does that feel? Right. So yeah, I mean, the ultimate goal, you know, in the texts, in using these phrases, just like in any of the, in the universal sense, is to become liberated. Or experience unbinding. Where basically you walk around like this, and then that happens. Now, that doesn't feel as good as that. And if you do it yourself, that doesn't feel so great. That feels better. But it's a scary process. What does that mean if I become unbound? Do I become somebody else? Do I not care about what I cared about? Do I not want to watch basketball? Do I want to, I mean, am I somebody else? Well, the answer is probably yes. But it's also probably like, you know what, if that's the case, it's probably okay at that point, you know, that you can let go of those things at that point in time. So there's a personal aspect to these, obviously. Very personal, deeply personal. And a transpersonal dimension as well. So again, it's about confronting head on, this is the way I look at it, into reality of what it is to be alive. birth, aging, sickness, dying. Yeah. Yeah. So it actually takes some faith and courage to turn towards these things, especially as you start to feel whatever you feel. It could be curiosity. It could be freaked out. You know, it could be, why am I doing this? But it takes some form of faith that it's worthwhile to face everything as opposed to not, because your whole life you've been not. And it probably hasn't gotten you that far anyhow, so you might as well. So there must be some motivation for doing any of these practices past a certain point and allowing yourself to feel what they bring up for you. So it's totally about dealing with what is. So there's a line from the Zen tradition. This is cool. I heard this from Christina Feldman, teacher. It says, what is happiness? It is the complete, unrestricted cooperation with the unavoidable. I'm going to say that again. It's just so cool. What is happiness? It is the complete, unrestricted cooperation with the unavoidable. Can you feel, the power in that? So it's kind of, that's exactly what these phrases are inviting us to do. To get over ourselves and face the truth. To face what is unavoidable. And it doesn't mean that life's bad or life's this. It's just, this is what it is. It prepares us. Helps us reflect on what's come before, when we've seen this in our lives, and what's going to continually come. So again, like we did, we can use these phrases in meditation as a point of focus. And we just watch our minds, see what happens. And I believe if we do them, and from my own personal experience, is that things change as we rub up against these truths. And again, in the suttas, and I'll read this to you in a second, it is said that just the earnest reflection of these phrases, ultimately, the karma, the force behind these, can lead to final unbinding or liberation. So this is from Bodhipaksa, who has a website called Wild Mind. I think he's Australian. Good guy. Now, this is only for one of the phrases. And there's two things involved in this that come up here. It says, and this is more traditional. It says, now, a disciple of the noble ones considers this. And this is really cool. It says, I am not the only one subject to aging who has not gone beyond aging. To the extent that there are beings, past and future, passing away and re-arising, all beings are subject to aging, have not gone beyond aging. When he or she often reflects on this, the factors of the path, that's the Eightfold Path, take birth. He or she sticks with that path, develops it, cultivates it. As he or she sticks with that path, develops it and cultivates it, the fetters are abandoned, the obsessions destroyed. So the fetters are, let's see, I got them listed here. Sensual lust, anger, conceit, views, doubt, attachment to rites and rituals, thirst for existence, thirst for non-existence, jealousy. So these are all the fetters that make up the four stages of enlightenment in the Theravadin cosmology, you have a stream enterer, then a once returner, then a non-returner, means you're not coming back. That's basically what it means. You're not going to be born again. And then last, an arahant. So these are, so again, it says, if we focus on these reflections, they can actually ultimately lead to our final liberation. So that's, you know, that's pretty potent. Now, it's not just that. What happens that they, reflecting on the phrases, leads to other things, which leads to other things, which leads to other things, which leads to liberation. This leads to this, leads to this. In other words, it's a process of going deeper. And if these reflections have any impact, and you see that, you're probably going to act on that and do things to go deeper. So they have a power of themselves. So, and I love this phrasing too, and that is that, again, I am not the only one. So there's a compassionate aspect to this, a connectivity to these phrases. First, it's about me, then it's about us. Because we're all brothers and sisters, right? And in aging, sickness, and dying. That's what Larry Rosenberg likes to say. And I think that's cool, right? We're all in the same family. We're all going the same way. So we should all get right with it and right with each other in that respect. So Sharon, I believe last time you had mentioned, you asked something. Is Sharon still here? There's Sharon. Yeah, there you are, Sharon. Okay.
Yes.
So anyhow, you had spoken, you had asked Val about practices that go along with these, I think. That's what I remember.
Cultivating.
Yeah, cultivating practices that could cultivate or can help you see through a Dharma lens using these phrases. So I got one right here for you. It's an easy one. You may not want to do it, but I do it all the time, and I just kind of realized today. See this? It's called the obituaries. Right? I've been reading these for years. At first, every day, and then I look at them again on the weekend to see if I missed anybody, if there was somebody I didn't see. So, and the reason I do it at first was, I've been in the insurance business for 40 years. I've sold a lot of life insurance to people. And in this business, like any other business, you lose touch with many people. And if I see someone that I recognize as a client that passed away, then I know it. And then I could make a phone call or try and find who's left and try and help them with, see if that life insurance is in place and just try and be a resource to help. In that process, but really it became a practice. And of course this relates to the phrase on we can't escape dying, but also very much so that we will be separated from all that we hold dear. Because that's right in there when you look at obit. Right? So you know, for me, it's, again, it's a way to really viscerally see that everybody, especially the folks that have passed, they're my brother and sister in aging, sickness, and death. It's right there. And it's quite amazing to see, and it's also amazing to watch what comes up in the direct experience of reading obituaries, right? So you read about families, right? And we all come from families. We know about family. So you read about families. You read about their achievements. So you get their whole story, right? Their life, their life. Each one of us has a life. Each one of us has a story. We might not think it's worth anything or whatever. It's no big deal because it's just us. Everybody's got a story, right? You get to see their passions, their impact on their families' lives and beyond. So you see the ripple effect of someone passing. You also get to see, when you see today, there was a 30-year-old who passed away, and I see my, immediately go, ah, I feel the flutter of my heart and the sadness that arises when I see someone 30 years old has passed away. And what that must be like as a parent, because I'm a parent, and what that must be like for their families. Right? Because nobody lives in a vacuum. They're the same as me. Then on the other side, you marvel at how long people can live. It's amazing. Today, one person is 98, the other was 101. Last week I read, and this person was alive, it was really funny. It was an article on this person who lives in Corrales, who's 108. And he had the coronavirus and he lived. He's 108 years old. And then I took a better look at it, and this is what I'm talking about. It winds up that his son, who he lives with, was my client at one time. And that kind of just blew me away, so it made it that much more personal. And then I remembered that this guy used to tell me about his father. You know, that his father lived with him and he was a big baseball fan and all this stuff. And it was just really very cool from back east. But 108 years old, is that incredible? Right? Right. So compassion is part of this, right? You know, if you read these with an open heart, with this, again, this idea in mind that all that you hold dear, will pass in its own time. It's not, you know, it's not an easy thing to hold. But we're not alone. So we're alone together in that. And what you also get from the, what I get from the obits is the aloneness of it. You know, when we die alone. So there's that. And the grief that people feel. That's an individual experience. We may do it together, but we do it alone. And that's to be felt and understood as well. It's deeply personal, but it's deeply universal. So these phrases can come alive. So that's just one way. And, you know, we'll see if I even get to what I'm supposed to be talking about tonight. But so I had another thing I wanted to bring up only because it's really been pressing on my mind. I'll try and make this brief, but also as an example of these phrases. So it's Memorial Day. I have a brother that, and I've mentioned him before, he passed away 16 years ago. He had a heart attack, passed away suddenly. So my brother was in Vietnam. He was drafted because he was switching from a community college, dig this, to a private college. So he basically was in intercession, didn't know you could be drafted, but in essence, he had no tie to any school for a month, because he was going from Bronx Community College to NYU, which is a private institution. So they came in, the government came in, he had to take a physical, and they ordered a physical, and my father said, look, don't worry, because they won't, by the time they get to the physical, you'll be back in school. Well, they got the physical in 3 days. They knew what they were doing. So my brother was drafted, not what he wanted. Not what anybody wanted. Went to basic training, and then to avoid being on the front lines, he was a smart guy, he went to artillery school. So that he was a good, he had a good acumen for math. And he became an officer or a high-ranking sergeant, I don't remember. But he basically would adjust the trajectory of the guns. So he had to live with that. So he came back. Everybody told me he was different. Now he's 6 years older than me. I didn't really know him in the way other people knew him. He was just like a second father. You know, he just kind of helped raise me in his own bizarre way. And we didn't have a great relationship at that time. Well, fast forward years to last year. And the short story is that my sister-in-law, his wife, through a fluke really, applied for benefits, disability benefits for Agent Orange. Disability due to Agent Orange or death due to Agent Orange. And basically what they do is they look at your records and see if you were in the right place at the right time, and then they just assume that Agent Orange had something to do with either your disability or death. So my sister-in-law now gets a pension. Now the first thing that came up for me when that happened was maybe he didn't have to die. Right? Maybe he could be alive today if he didn't go to that war against his will. So it's interesting the way this came up, because I didn't really think I was thinking about it. But the gentleman across the street from where I live's got this big flag sticking up because it's Memorial Day. And did I get pissed off? Yeah, I got pissed. So, and that's what I'm saying. This came up in me. That's all I'm trying to say. That holding these phrases, we've been talking about these phrases, and here's my brother's death. It's right here again. And maybe it didn't have to happen. So I had to work with all these things that were coming up. And so the anger, the sadness, more grief, all that. That's what these phrases are speaking to. Here it is. This is my life. This is in my life. These phrases apply to that. And then I was thinking about my reactions, or I was trying to feel them. And well, first of all, compassion arose as well, the more I hung out around with it, because there's so many people in the same boat as he was. So many people collecting these benefits that was not their intention to breathe in Agent Orange, right? And who didn't want to be in that place. So I had a lot of compassion for all those folks and their families. And that's also folks that we remember at this time. In essence, he gave his life. He might have given his life for his country, my brother. Not that he wanted to, but he did. And how many are there that happened? Thousands, thousands, thousands. Right? And then on the other side of it, in a transpersonal way, just to look at the way things arose in me. All these conditions came together for me to get upset or for me to feel what I'm feeling. Right? In other words, there was I consciousness, boom, I see the flag across the street. Just seeing. Just rage. Just an emotion. And then I also thought about it in a karmic sense. So I think about John Prine once, when he was about to go into Sam Stone, you know, probably the best anti-war song ever written. He wrote it in 1971, it's almost 50 years ago. And he tells a story before he went in. He tells about him and his friend, go down to Washington, D.C. And he called, yeah, they went to visit the phone book, he called, which is basically the wall with all the guys who died, their names. So he says, yeah, we're looking at a phone book, looking for my friends' names, you know, in the phone book. And he says, it's funny, you know. He goes, because when you see their name in the glass, you know what you also see? He goes, you see your own reflection. That's what you see. So that's always had an impact on me. And there isn't anything I can do about my brother's passing. But maybe there's something I can do to prevent other people from passing. So I see that as a gift, and I see that as karma as well. So I just wanted to share that with you. I hope it was appropriate. To me, it does relate to these phrases, and it's just been in my throat the last 2 days. So I thought I would share that with you. So in the last few minutes we got, I guess I'll talk about what I was supposed to talk about. The phrase, I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as my arbiter. Whatever I do for good or evil, to that I will fall heir. So even years ago when I first heard these, the first thing that came to me, I really felt good about it. Because it said, you know, all these phrases that we're talking about here basically say we don't have control of anything. Yeah, I'm gonna get old. I can't fix, you know, I can't change that. I'm gonna be sick. I'm gonna die. You know, I don't know when. You know, there isn't much control in there. You know, I mean, and that's the point, to know that we don't control. And we let go of that. But the one thing that we can control is how we work with what's arising in the moment, and how we respond or react. Because that then becomes the grooves of our lives. Because what's already coming up is the karma of the past. It's too late. So all we can do is see what's arising, feel that we're not, and in feeling the dukkha of that, we aspire to something else and don't act on that. And that lessens the impact of those sankhara, or grooves, conditioning. That's karma. So that's how we're living with existing karma and how we can change it by being present. So there's a sense of personal responsibility in that that I really found appealing and also grounding. Because the other phrases are not grounding. The only thing that's grounding in them is the acceptance that the only thing that is certain is uncertainty. Right? So it's kind of having faith in uncertainty, but there is something that we can control in our own personal spheres that ultimately will have repercussions in the world, because intentions affect our thoughts, speech, and action. And that's where everything starts. They all start as intention. Everything starts as an intention, whether we know it or not. Tibetans say everything rests on the tip of motivation. Second Noble Truth says that as well. The right thought, the second part of the Eightfold Path system. So, are my intentions grounded in what is wholesome? Peace, kindness, compassion? Are they the ground on which I stand, you stand? In every moment, there's a choice as to how to respond. This is from Christina Feldman. It is the cultivation of the lovely or the wholesome that allows for the unbinding from the unlovely the unskillful. Each time we reset our intentions toward the wholesome, we are withdrawing from the nutriment of reactivity, and we nourish our intentionality. Constantly resetting our intentions as they become shaken by familiar habit patterns of rage, of, well, let's say anger, anxiety, aversion, we can come to an unshakability of kindness, compassion, joyfulness, equanimity. So those are profound words. Now, the path to get there, I don't think it's easy. You're not going to walk around smiling all the time when things are not, you know, worth smiling at. But there can be a different foundation from where you come from, where I come from, as far as responsiveness, as opposed to reactivity. That could be grown. So I got about 8 more pages, but I don't think I got time. So maybe another 5 talks I have here on this. So it's, you know, it's about 3 minutes to 8. We can go a little over, whatever you want to do, it's fine. And but you can unmute yourselves. I'd like to hear if somebody has a reaction to, or what came up when they did that, when they reflected on the reflection, if they did that and if anything came up at all, you know, or we can talk about anything. Yeah, Carol, you got to unmute yourself, Carol. That's fine. Go ahead.
It's that is the word intention is what came to me when I was reflecting on that phrase about action. And so just, you know, in accordance with what you were saying was my experience too.
Cool.
Let's act intentionally.
Yeah. Actually, we kind of do it. Although when we meditate, we do that. We're intentionally focusing our attention. So, and we come back from thought.
But action too, yeah.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Both, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, sure. Kel? Kelly?
Like Carol, the intention also came up for me immediately, and I was beginning to explore or think about intention is action, in a sense. I mean, if my intention is to, you know, save this animal I see along the side of the road, and then bam, it gets hit before I get to pull over, it doesn't mean that my action was incomplete in a way. It was my intention and my compassion and my reaching out that was my action, and the, you know, the results of my intention didn't pan out the way I wanted, but yeah, so I was just exploring that whole idea of intention as a form, or if it means action in a sense. And then I also wanted to comment a little bit about the 5 recollections. And I had, several years ago, I was in the capital of Ladakh, and, you know, we have cows wandering around the streets and donkeys and all kinds of things. And there was this huge, huge bull, steer, I'm not sure what you call them, I'm not a cow person, but this massive animal walking down the street, and with every step, it was just wailing in pain. And it just hit me, and I started crying right there in the middle of the street. And, you know, in Ladakh, people don't express emotions like that. But anyway, you know, and I turned to someone, whoever was beside me, because people were seeing this huge animal, you know, going down the street, traffic stopping, and every step in so much pain. And I was saying, problem, problem. And they were saying, yes, problem. Great, okay. You know, that's acceptance. It was during a period where I was having a really hard time maintaining any kind of equanimity around suffering, around the suffering I was seeing and witnessing here. And I remember writing to Brian saying, I can't, you know, this suffering is affecting me too much. I need to be able to see it and feel for it, but I also need to, you know, feel some balance in myself. And he brought up the recollections again, and for animals to also see that, you know, this is the nature of things, that they also are the nature to grow old and to experience illness. And it really shifted things for me to see, because I tend to focus on the human aspect rather than all sentient beings experiencing the same things. So anyway, I just wanted to share that briefly.
That's great. That's a great teaching right there. Thank you. That's awesome. That's awesome. I think it also really shows that what happens when you do these, when they broaden out in their inclusivity of everything, there is, and especially in what you described and what Brian was talking about, there is a pulling, there can be a pulling back, right?
Yeah.
So it's not as personal. It's not as identified. So it's personal, but it's not. So, and then the pain that you were feeling can be worked with in the sense of the space of the non-identification that opens up. I mean, and it's not a total non-identification, it's just that it's you, it's all of us, right? So that kind of, including animals, including everything. Yeah, that's very cool. Thank you.
Yeah, it's like an acceptance of, it's a constant reminder of reality. Right. And, that, you know,
and it's a wisdom teaching. I mean, it is a wisdom teaching. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks. Anybody else?
One of the things that came up for me was some opposites.
I'm sorry, I didn't. That broke up. Some what?
Some opposites.
Opposites. Okay.
So I was thinking. Yes, I'm. The ground I stand on is my actions, but it's also my inactions.
Exactly.
And. I was also thinking, you know, I generally tend to think of karma in the negative. Like this shaky ground I'm standing on is because of my bad actions. And then I went, but the solid ground that I'm standing on is because of my good actions. So it was kind of neat to see both sides.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I was feeling that kind of the same. The idea of inaction, that's kind of like what John Prine was pointing to. And it's not, regardless, as a collective, maybe there was more we all could have done in regards to Vietnam. So when he says, when you see your own reflection in the wall, you know, of names in DC, that it could it reflects on your own. That's how I take that. And that's how I see that for me personally, my own inaction. And there's no guilt in that. It's just a fact where I was at that point in time as a young man. But yeah, and to see that inaction also certainly has repercussions. Thanks. And I know your name's not Ground Luminosity, so I keep forgetting your name.
But I'm going to change it, so it is.
Is that going to be your name?
No, this is Claudia.
Okay, Claudia. Okay, I don't know. Okay.
Fred, I just wanted to thank you for such a beautiful talk. And
well, thank you.
For sharing your story and the story of your brother, especially on this day. it's very poignant, and I appreciated the honesty that you brought to it. And I think what struck me about the piece of the talk is when you mentioned Christina Feldman's quote about what is happiness, and the idea of happiness in such a somber moment, right? Of what, of remembering the dead, of remembering your brother, of remembering what could have been evitable, right? It wasn't inevitable. It wasn't unavoidable, is what she says, right? The happiness. But the thing about seeing it clearly, right? It's not that we're gonna feel happy, but there's a liberation there of being able to recognize it. And that liberation is what the happiness is. It's not necessarily like an emotion of happiness, but just to be able to see it clearly. And I just wanted to honor the clarity that you brought tonight.
Thank you, that's beautiful. That's perfect. Thank you. That was very clear. That was very good, very clear. Thank you. Thank you very much. So it's moving on. It's about 7 after 8. I know you guys got to go to bed. Because a lot of you are old. So you got to go to sleep. I understand. Like you, Jerry. You got to go to sleep, brother. Come on. Anyhow, me too. I got to go to bed. We good? Does anybody have anything else they'd like to say? How about unmuting so we could say, be a mutant, be an unmutant, will you? Everybody unmute and say goodnight.
Good night.
Good night. Don't let the bed bugs bite. All right, see you later.
Night.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Remember to give, okay? Remember to get to that link. See everybody. See you, Cal, Cynthia, Alice, Jerry, Carol.
Hey, Fred.
Ed, Carol, Alice. Yes.
Stay a second longer if you could write me. I'd really like to know. I'd really like to hear again the give me the energy.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I'll stay. Okay. All right. I mean, I'll say it for you now. You want to write it? See you, Mel.
Bye.
So there are 4 of them. See you, Jer.
Jer.
Alice.
See y'all.
Bye. Bye, Jerry.
First one is give me energy for my heart to turn to the spiritual.
Okay.
Second is give me energy for the spiritual become a way.
For the spiritual to become a way?
Yes. Way. Two words. Give me energy for this way to dispel confusion.
Yeah.
And give me energy for confusion to arise as wisdom.
And this was by whom?
Ken McLeod basically kind of rephrased these Tibetan invocations. He calls them prayers. That's what he calls them.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, really, really lovely.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
See you guys.
Good night.
Here in your future.
Do I? Yeah, right. There you are. That's right.
Yes,
it's tomorrow over there. That's right.
Looks good.
All right. See ya.
Bye.